It's funny, last night on Coast to Coast AM, George Knapp was doing the Friday night open lines, and he allowed me to jump on, do a quick promo for this weekend. And I said that I felt like the cream in a George sandwich between George Norrie and George Knapp. And I realized, how many people have cream sandwiches? It makes sense in kind of an Oreo context, but I guess I'm more of the ham in a George sandwich, and that's exactly how I feel tonight. Should be a great show. I'm going to be doing tonight and tomorrow night, and then George Norrie will be back on Monday on Coast to Coast AM. We'll tell you more about Sunday night show in just a few minutes. Tonight, this is one that I really believe in. It's such a well-written, well-researched book that I can only, in the end, believe that it's true, although it just seems so incredible. Aleister Crowley is a name that pops up a lot on Coast to Coast AM. He was a mystic. He was a guy who had a strong following in his lifetime, but an even bigger following in death. He was a guy who had a he was a guy who sort of broke ground on in the areas where people are still following him today, into mysticism, into Gnosticism, into the Kabbalah. He's a guy who is considered to be sort of the godfather of Luciferians everywhere. He was an occultist with a reputation in his lifetime that actually matches the one in his death. In fact, what we're finding out now is that he might have been responsible for things in his lifetime that he never openly took credit for. And maybe he couldn't, because he was sworn not to admit to it as a secret agent. Aleister Crowley, the occultist, as a British secret agent, one even acknowledged by the likes of famous secret agents like Ian Fleming. The book is called Secret Agent 666. It's about Aleister Crowley, the British intelligence, and the occult, and more specifically, about how Aleister Crowley might have been centrally involved in the sinking of the Lusitania, in various attempts at overthrowing sovereign governments, and even in the 1941 flight of Rudolf Hess. We'll tell you more about that with R.B. Spence coming up next hour. Let's do open lines this hour, and then coming up, not just our polar cap, but our polar pants are melting too. Little teeny weeny black holes all around us. More UFO reports over England. And as it turns out, you decided to stick around for crypto news 10 seconds ago. It's just that your brain hadn't told you yet. It's coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Always seems like the perfect combo on Coast to Coast AM when we do something that's kind of new and then something that is kind of familiar too at the same time. So that means tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, we'll have that going again with us with our friend Glenn Kimball, who's been doing cutting edge, I believe it might even be an understatement, research on the knowledge of Bigfoot like creatures in biblical times. Glenn says it's right there in front of our eyes if we know where to look, and he'll show us where coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Also tonight, then, Secret Agent 666, but open lines before we get to Richard B. Spence next hour. So the rest of this hour, it's entirely up to you. Where are you going to take us? We'll find out here in just a minute. Those of you who know the numbers can go to them. If you don't, coasttocoastam.com is the website. It's got everything you need to know there. And that reminds you, have you seen the satellite imagery of California and the wildfires there that are still burning? The whole lower half of the state is covered in forest fire smoke. Saw it on CNN. It's amazing. Is it just me, or does anybody else think that as long as the California atmosphere is choking with smoke anyway, they ought to roll back some of those draconian anti-cigarette laws there? I mean, what's the harm right now? There's smoke everywhere. Why not let people light up if they feel like it? All across the country, pockets of people who may or may not be listening to us right now are without power as various strong early summer storms have been wreaking havoc across the United States. Do you have your calamity kit yet from the Sea Crane folks yet? You ought to get one. It was a close call in Nebraska today. Cozad, Nebraska, according to wire reports. Residents there woke this morning to a weather phenomenon known as a heat burst. Temperatures rose 20 degrees in a matter of minutes, while winds reached speeds of 75 miles per hour. There was at least one close call. Nancy Wurst said her son just missed injury as a tree crashed into his car. She said, quote, "My son was about a minute from being in the car. He was standing at the door getting ready to come outside to go to work. If that would have happened 1 minute later, he would have been in that car." Now, by now, you've probably heard that the weather of the North Pole means a lot more melting. And according to one prediction earlier in the week, as heard on Coast to Coast AM, we will be free of ice this summer for a period of time at the North Pole. But now new evidence also says that beneath the Arctic ice, there's a series of underwater volcanoes that have erupted in violent explosions in the past decade, hidden 2.5 miles beneath the Arctic surface. Volcanoes are up to a mile in diameter and so far a few hundred yards tall. They formed along the Gackle Ridge. That's a lengthy crack in the ocean crust where two rocky plates are spreading apart, pulling new melted rock to the surface. Until now, scientists thought undersea volcanoes only dribbled lava from cracks in the seafloor. The extreme pressure from the overlaying water makes it difficult for gas and magma to blast outward. But the Gackle Ridge, which is relatively unexplored and considered unique for its slow spreading rate, is just the place for some surprises, according to the website Live Science. How about this for a funny surprise? What if they made a particle collider that accidentally created a black hole that not only swallowed the particle collider itself, but all the professors, all the starving grad students standing near it, as well as, I don't know, the football team, the cheerleaders, the team mascot, the whole local college town? Oh, heck, why don't we just say the entire planet? What if you had a particle collider that created a black hole that ended up being the end of the universe? Well, it turns out that's not likely to happen. In a story in today's physorg.com, the part about black holes is true, just not the part about them eating Cincinnati. According to University of California, Santa Barbara physics professor Steve Gettings, that part is fiction. The paper, co-authored by a guy for the European Center for Nuclear Research, otherwise known as CERN, which is building the world's first largest giant Gantor particle collider, they investigate hypothesized behavior that tiny black holes might be created by high-energy collisions in the CERN particle accelerator. If they appear at all, according to this paper, these black holes would exist for about a nanosecond, Giddings said, very scientifically, adding that they would have no effect of consequence. However, the paper does study whether there could be any large-scale effects in an extremely hypothetical situation where the black holes don't evaporate, or the black holes stick around. The Giddings study concludes that such microscopic black holes would be harmless. You know, harmless. Like those signs that say, "Do not enter." Oh, wait, bad example. Cobb County, Georgia, My Fox Atlanta reports investigators with Cobb County Police said a church group went to Six Flags Over Georgia when a group of the boys jumped a fence and entered into an area that was marked off limits. One of the boys jumped up and tried to grab someone's feet who was on the Batman ride. I've been on that ride. That's a ride where you sit in a kind of sling as you whip around and your legs dangle down. The boy ended up being decapitated while trying to grab for the other kid's foot. So let's recap. Stay out of restricted areas. Don't run with scissors. Please be careful with fireworks this 4th of July. Sometimes bad things do happen to good people. We need all of you good people out there listening. Sometimes things just happen with no explanation at all. And this one from The Sun, you can find out more on this at coasttocoastam.com. A baffled university professor who spotted a UFO in England last night said, quote, "There is no logical explanation Dr. Simon Griffey saw lights loom over a mountain village in an area known as Brecon Beacons before they disappeared. His close encounter is the third reported in the space of just 5 days following sightings by the Army and police. Dr. Griffey is 50. He and his son, Jack, were driving when they spotted lights over this particular mountain. He said there was no noise whatsoever. It was a bit eerie. I've driven over this mountain for 17 years and have never seen anything like it. There were 7 lights, and having read the description from the soldiers in Shropshire, there were some similarities. They were same sort of color, the same spherical shape that they reported. Quote, I know I wasn't seeing things because my son Jack saw exactly the same thing I did. 2 other cars pulled over to look. This close encounter happened at 11:40 on Thursday, June 12th, at a place equidistant between 2 areas that had been the scene of sightings earlier. The Sun UK reported Tuesday how 3 British soldiers saw 13 UFOs spinning almost exactly at this time last Saturday. Just over 90 minutes later and 80 miles away, the crew of a South Wales police chopper reported a UFO as it tried to land at St. Athan's, something that they've been reporting on regularly during the week on Coast to Coast. Maybe the UFOs are coming and going through those little tiny black holes that might be existing for just a split second. You know, like those Acme black holes that used to come in a box that Wile E. Coyote was always trying to use on the Roadrunner. Maybe Wile E. Coyote was a super genius after all. And that reminds me, last story, then we'll get to the open lines. Wall Street Journal Online reports the brain, researchers have found, appears to make up its mind 10 seconds before we become conscious of a decision. And that's an eternity in the world of the speed of thought. These findings challenge conventional notions of choice. What they're saying here is this means, in ways we're only beginning to understand, the synapses and the neurons in the human nervous system as a whole work in concert to A, perceive the world around us, B, learn from those perceptions, C, remember important experiences of our past as they inform the experience we are having, D, within 10 seconds, we plan ahead, and E, decide, and F, act on the information that our brain is collating. In kind of a rudimentary way, all of those actions predetermine what we think of as choice. In a manner of speaking, the choices we are appearing to make are really just the sum totals of all the data that is collected in the 10 seconds leading up to what we thought of as an expression of free will. Studying the human behavior leading up to the moment of so-called conscious decision, for example, these researchers identified signals in students that let them know when, in a certain study, a subject was going to make a movement. They could predict the movement the student was going to make 70% of the time just by reading the signals in their brain. And in a test where students were given certain stimuli to press a button, the researchers could actually predict which button the students would push based on brain activity. And just because I don't want to be that predictable and I'm in a rebellious mood, I'm not going to make any conscious decision to push a button here to get it started on open lines. I'm closing my eyes and I'm moving my mouse randomly and I'm clicking onto this one, whoever that is. East of the Rockies, Charles is in Ohio. Completely free choice. And Charles, where are you going to take us on open lines?
I'd like to tell you something, Ian, and I hope you don't believe me, but if you get a chance, you might want to check into it. It's 4 things. 1, a common vehicle is capable, a common car up to 4,000 pounds is capable of getting 80 miles to the gallon on straight gasoline.
2. I've heard about this. Oh, there's several different devices and new products out in the market. Yep.
And number 2, a common car could be converted to run off of water.
I've been hearing about that, yes.
3, if the U.S. was really interested in extending the fuel supply and helping out the American people, our fuel could be mixed with 50% gasoline, with 50% water, and it could be burned in our vehicles today.
I read about this actually at fizzorg.com. They have a link to a commercial product that you can buy that could do that tomorrow. Have you done it yet to your car?
No, I haven't used that, but see...
why not?
There's two ways to do that.
Why haven't you converted your car to it if it's so simple?
I've taken the second approach. The other approach is, instead of putting the water in the gasoline, you put the water in the engine at the intake manifold. So it's a water injection system similar to what they used in the Second World War, and it allows you to increase your mileage.
And you've done that, and you're getting 80 miles a gallon.
No, that's not for 80 miles to the gallon. That's for 50% gasoline, 50% water. That just gives you, cuts your gasoline hydrocarbon use in half.
So you're getting, go ahead, and you've actually done this, and it's working for you.
Yes, I use water injection, and it does work. Yeah. But see, a lot of people use water injection, but it's like everything else. There's little subtleties to it. But
I really encourage people to pursue those subtleties. Time prevents us from being able to go too deep into it now, but I would encourage them. In fact, there's several different places where you can link up to. If you even just sort of Googled it, you can go there. And it's not hard, apparently, to do. I would just caution you to think, why are we waiting for the government to do it? If you have it within your power to do it and you could start saving tomorrow, go ahead. Don't wait for them. Blair, west of the Rockies, in Sedona, Arizona, on Coast to Coast AM. Blair?
Hi, Ian. Actually, I'm in Laguna Beach. I'm on my way to UCLA this week for International Urantia Book Fellowship Conference. But I wanted to talk about Genesis chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, where it says, when Cain went from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod, and then he knew his wife. Well, right. Where the heck did Nod come from and his wife come from if Cain and Abel were the first humans and Adam and Eve, the first progeny of the first humans of Adam and Eve?
Well, this does bring up, this is a question that actually gets discussed a lot, and I find it very compelling. There are arguments that are made that says that those people that existed were not Homo sapiens, that those people that existed outside of that community in which Homo sapiens, as we know them today, were growing, were actually perhaps remnants of other hominids, but weren't of the exact same species. There are those that say it's a metaphor for people that were given the spark of God that Adam and Eve had. They were imbued with a fragment of the divine. And the people outside of their lineage did not have it. They existed, but they did not exist on the same plane as Adam and Eve. So those are just two possible explanations.
That's pretty close to the Urantia Book concept that Adam and Eve were biological uplifters, and they came to uplift this human race. But when the Hebrew rabbis were in Babylonian captivity in 900 B.C., they had to quickly boost the Hebrew nation's spirits up. And so when they were rewriting scriptures, this is according to the Urantia Book, and they edited out any reference to human civilization before Adam and Eve, but they forgot those two lines. So that's
I doubt they forgot anything. And in fact, that's sort of the beauty of the Hebrew scriptures is that the things that are left in there, I think, are very much left in there with intention. That it would have been very easy to redact that. There's no forget. It's not like there was one bite at the apple, right, where they just had one chance to take it out. The editing, the additions, the subtractions to these texts have been going on over hundreds of years. There's a reason why it's still in there. I think it's the reason why we're still having this conversation. Let's go to the wild card line. Louisa is in Alabama on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Louisa, where are you going to take us?
Hi, thank you. Sulfite preservatives need to be outlawed because it's poison to those of us who are violently allergic to it, and some people even die from it. The first I heard of this was on 60 Minutes 20 years ago. A large segment of the population is so violently allergic to sulfite, it can cause severe asthma attacks, and some people die from that.
What about peanuts?
Well, that This is SoFi. So traumatic.
No, I know, but what about people who are so violently allergic to peanuts?
And they finish the sulfites first and the peanuts next.
Okay, well, I
have
appreciate
a one-track mind, so this is just traumatic and disruptive, and it can lead to post-traumatic syndrome, rendering a person just unemployable and on disability.
Well, I appreciate that. My producer has a one-track mind, too, and he's telling me I got to jump here because we're coming up to a break. But thank you, Louisa, and everybody, hang on. More open lines for the rest of this hour than Secret Agent 666 on Coast to Coast AM. So here we go into our last half hour of open lines, and then Secret Agent 666. Is it true that Aleister Crowley was a British intelligence agent? Could he have been involved in the sinking of the Lusitania? And what about his double agent-like interactions with the Germans all the way into the Nazi era? Aleister Crowley, did even Ian Fleming himself respect the espionage work of the man who's sort of the godfather, at least the emotional grandfather of modern occultism? We'll talk about it coming up next hour with one historian who's written a really interesting book on that subject, Richard B. Spence, coming up on Coast to Coast AM. Coming up tomorrow night, I'm in for George Knapp, who is in for George Norrie on Friday night. So I'm doing Friday night. I'm going to do Saturday. We're going to be talking about Bigfoot, as Bigfoot may have existed even in biblical times. Glenn Kimball is going to be back on. He's been working on this for a long time, and he kind of promised us a long time ago he would give us his next big expose. And this is it, Sunday night on these very same stations on Coast to Coast AM. Where are you going to take us? You're the show for now. Next, with Ian Punnett, with a face for radio and a voice for print on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the first-time caller line to rev us up for this last half hour of open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And it's Jude in Baton Rouge on C2C. Hey, Jude.
Hey, Jude. How many times have I heard that?
I bet. Well, you can't help it in the South. They say, hey, Jude, every time you walk past, don't they?
Oh, and when people meet me, they sing the song, and I hate to be because of it.
I spared you that. Where are you going to take us, Jude?
Well, okay. 10 years ago, regrettably, when I was in college, my friends had brought over a Ouija board. We played with it. Okay. So I thought it was BS, but it's real. And among other things, this thing called itself Zozo, right? Well, the other day, like Thursday, out of curiosity, I just was thinking about it. I looked up Ouija and Zozo on Google, and it seems to be a very common experience that people talk to some entity named Zozo through a Ouija board. And that just shocked me. And the reason I thought it was real, because first I thought it was, not real, was I asked it a question to spill something that was scrawled on the wall of my room that only I knew what it was, and it spelled it out. It was Sparky. Somebody had scribbled their name on the wall or something.
I wonder how many people connect Zozo with the Led Zeppelin album of the same name.
I didn't even know there was a Led Zeppelin album Zozo back then. I know there is now, but I also know that if you play Stairway to Heaven backward, it is sick, freaky, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
so I'm wondering, what is Zozo? That's what I'm wondering.
I come and go on the whole back masking thing, but I mean, I think there are times when it may be true, but I think most of the time we hear into the back mask what we want to. But I will say
Stairway to Heaven, though, is an extreme example of back masking. If you ask
me. Ouija boards in general, I think I've always stayed away from them, too. And I know that George was going to do a big experiment one night on Coast to Coast, and then
I don't even think I'd listen to that one.
Bagged it at the last second. He had too much pressure. That is kind of an intriguing idea, and I don't know whether I could ever. Maybe I'll work up to it by getting a Luigi board, the Italian version. I'll do that first.
Well,
and then
I just wonder if anybody else, because of all the listeners out there and of what I've seen on come up as results, if anybody else has heard of Zozo or played with a Ouija board and talked to something named Zozo. I read another man's blog post about Zozo, the reptoid he had met through a Ouija board. Now, I don't believe in reptilian shapeshifters in so much as, like, aliens taking over. But I do believe in demons, you know what I'm saying, who, the Bible calls Satan a dragon, the old serpent,
Well, I did Google
and this
it.
This thing called itself Jesus, and we were like, no, you're not Jesus. What's your real name? Z-O-Z-O-Z-O-Z-O-Z-O. And it kept doing that whenever it was mad or whatever.
Well, I did Google it while you were talking, and I did see that, in fact, there are several blogs to that effect, and people have been talking about it. So worthy of a future conversation. Maybe we get a guest who knows something about that sort of thing. Wildcard line. Andy's been waiting patiently in the Palmetto State. Hey, Andy.
Hey, first a fast, mind-boggling factoid on something you spoke about earlier. Forget the yuppie-ish cubed nanosecond, just a plain old down-to-earth garden variety, real-world nanosecond, or billionth of a second. I'm going to map it out using a time-space frame, which is probably the only way to make it vivid to the average non-scientist lay mind. Goes by so fast that if a spaceship of the future were traveling at 100,000 miles an hour, faster than we've ever even come close to moving space shuttle, deep space probe, even Michael J. Fox's Back to the Future customized DeLorean, at 100,000 miles an hour during the course of a nanosecond, that spaceship would advance through space 2.5 thousandths of 1 inch.
Wow.
So those nanoseconds go right on by. What I called about to improve national security and our whole public and private education system, we have both individual saboteurs and more or less organized, conspiring, complicity type people scheming to dumb down our education. They either think or have their heads in the sand of such a gullible depth that they think that the world marketplace, goods and services, is going to say, well, those Americans are generous and benevolent, so we're going to compete with one hand tied behind our backs and give them a better fighting chance. Well, the marketplace doesn't work that way. People are out to maximize their bottom line, and you can't really blame them, so we have to do the same.
We do a lot of shows on economics, and I think we can do another one in the future on that too. We actually were talking about it the other day, and the tapeworm economy. It's time to get Catherine back. When we do that subject that night, I look forward to you calling in. You can tell us more about your tactic. Then John is in New York on Coast to Coast AM, and John, actually, that's what I was thinking of as being I've always heard the definition of a nanosecond is the time between, in New York City, it's the time between when the light turns green and the cab driver behind you starts honking. That's a nanosecond.
That means speed up.
Hey, John?
Yes, hello.
All right, where are you going to take us?
I agree with what you just said. That just means speed up.
Yep, go ahead.
In your car. Well, I'm ID info, John, but before I get to that, I'm watching. I know where all the chupacabras are. I'm watching.
Where are all the chupacabras?
I'm watching the Animal Channel, the ugliest dogs in the world.
I heard about
that's
this.
Where they are. God, oh, gosh. Oh.
I heard about that three-legged, one-eyed dog. I saw his picture. That's one homely dog.
Oh, God bless him. I hope he won, but I got to bait you a little bit. You're a funny guy, and I want to make a comment. Just, I'm teasing you a little bit. After my comment, please say, John, why am I funny? You, I mean. But IDs, it's getting incredibly obvious, so obvious that it's invisible. People, for example, my girlfriend today, who's 33 years old, and I hope she's not listening, she was with her mother, who's 58. Since you're with your daughter, the person says at a big supermarket, we need your ID, blah, 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 blah. Now, that's silly in and of itself, but it's just another example of just getting somebody's. If she was alone as a 58-year-old, probably not. But in the paper, you may have. Well, it was a national thing, so I hope you heard this. They're talking about putting in implants for people that are crazies, crazy people.
Right.
Now my theory, in theory, that's a good idea, in theory. But eventually, it's going to include anyone who is taking. Now, this is A to Z. Nothing.
When you say crazy people and implants, do you mean like breast implants? What kind of implants are you talking about?
Implants, people that have committed a crime, and because everyone, the people out there say, they should be locked up, and when they get released, they should have monitoring devices. Well, this is a good idea, but where, like you say, where's it going to take us?
Yeah.
It's going to take us eventually, slowly, over the years, anyone who's ever taken a controlled substance. First, if you were on Ritalin for a month, if you were on Prozac for a month, eventually that's where it's going to take us. I think. That's what I think.
Well, that's interesting thought. I'll have to mold that over, see if I follow that exactly. International Line, Wayne is in Montreal on Coast to Coast AM. And the time we have before the top of the hour, when we talk about Aleister Crowley and whether or not he was involved in the sinking of the Lusitania. Wayne, where are you going to take us?
Good morning, Ian. I want to go back rather calmly, but more seriously, about the show you had with this guy claiming he was Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I did a bit of research on the internet into that because it was very interesting that this guy got very, very calm and very denying about extraterrestrial life. So I got suspicious in the way of the Illuminati and did some research and found out who this guy was.
Right.
And the thing that I find, Ian, is there's two things. And actually, I'm worried about you a little bit personally as far as spirituality goes.
Well, you don't have to be worried there, but go ahead. What's your other
why thing? I am is because you're about to be ordained, I understand, as clergy.
Right.
And I feel that in this particular case, it's all right to sort of play joke on people or something. But you
why was it a joke?
Some disclaimer.
Wait. Why was it a joke?
Well, what I mean is you have someone claiming to be Jesus Christ, your Redeemer. You don't say where this person is from.
Wait. Stop. Wait. Yeah. Did you see Passion of the Christ?
The movie?
Yeah.
Actually, no, but I've heard about it. I didn't see it.
When you rent it, when you watch it sometime,
yes.
Call me back. And just round up to the nearest five, the number of times they put a disclaimer during the movie that's not really Jesus. When you're watching The Robe on television, and you see, 10-year-old Harry Shearer on the little donkey, when you see, the actor that plays Jesus in The Robe, count how many times they flash up on the screen, not really Jesus, not really Jesus, not really Jesus, and call me back.
Okay, but you see, Ian, you kind of sort of strung us along.
No, I didn't. You knew it wasn't Jesus. Wait, Wayne, did you know it was Jesus? Did you honestly, in your heart, did you believe I was talking to Jesus?
Well, on Coast to Coast, no, I didn't, but on Coast to Coast, I thought maybe it was J.C.
Okay, well, that's fine. But
first,
you knew it wasn't really Jesus, right?
We didn't know where we were going.
But Wayne, you knew it wasn't Jesus. End of story. Right? You knew it was not really Jesus. Right?
I knew, but there's some people out there who would get offended, and I begin to wonder who is.
Well, there are some people who are offended at Passion of the Christ, and let's just leave it there. There will always be some people who are offended. True?
Yeah,
no matter what you do.
And I don't think it's very good, by the way, for someone who's going to be clergy in the Episcopal Church to, make light of their Redeemer. If you know the gospel.
Stop right here. Wait. I never made light of my Redeemer. And Wayne, you're welcome to your opinions. But your opinions don't define my truth or my reality or the reality, period. They remain your opinion. You are welcome to that. But let's not pass that off like you're Jesus Christ, and you can look within my soul. Fair enough?
All I'm going by is the Gospels and what Christ said about there will be people who will come and say they are the Christ, and they're not the Christ. And so I listened to this guy, and after a while I could figure out he was not the Christ. He was something, and then I found out...
How long did it take you to figure out he wasn't really Jesus Christ, Wayne? How long? Round it off for me. How long did it take you to figure out I was not really talking to Jesus of Nazareth? Give me a ballpark.
Being a coast-to-coast listener, I'd say about half an hour, but
it took you one half hour to figure out I was not talking to Jesus of Nazareth.
Wait,
I'm really serious. It took you one half hour to figure out I did not really have Jesus of Nazareth on me.
This man knew his theology. And when I found out who he really is, I figure he is either deluded or he's just out trying to make a name for himself by using the name of our Redeemer in an irreverent way.
Well, there's nothing. Stop right there. There's nothing irreverent about what he did, Wayne, and what he did. There's a third option, and that it is a kind of performance art, just like it is for other people out there, and that's good. And I really enjoyed it. And if it started a bunch of conversations, way to go. If it took you a half hour to figure it out, my apologies to you. I have absolutely no regrets about that show or how he handled it, which I thought was of the utmost respect. And I thought whether you agreed with what he said as Jesus or not, I think it's a conversation worth having. And I think it's part of my mission in life is to find new ways to reimagine our conversations with the divine and not just to be standing in these classic, static, moribund models of people like me standing behind pulpits pointing their bony fingers of blame at unsuspecting sleeping congregations. That model doesn't work like it used to. So I think new models out there, new ways to engage possibilities, that's what I'm into. We'll go from there. Let's go to Dale, east of the Rockies in Florida on Coast to Coast AM. Dale?
Greetings, Ian. How you doing?
I couldn't be better.
Where I knew you back us? When you was at GST in Atlanta. when I first cried out to God, who are you and what
and what is he doing
about?
Here? Well, how can I get rid of this
guy? And to Ian Punnett on WGST. Now I'm speaking to you again.
Now, where are you? You're in Florida now. You're in Florida now, Dale?
I'm back here in Florida. I had a stroke in 2005, so I had to move back to Florida. No, nothing to be sorry about. This part of my journey is answering more and more questions. Everything is full of truth and information. But let me get this through. This might. I hope you can work this into your guests about the Melchizedek, King of Salem, which means peace. And he was the priest of the Most High. Genesis 14. What is this Melchizedek order of the cult of Melchizedek, which Emmanuel, Yeshua, he was made a priest after the order in Hebrew chapter 5. But really, every high priest that was taken from amongst men had to learn that order, not just Jesus.
I want one promise from you, Dale, that if I ever have a guest on here who claims to be Melchizedek, that you'll know. That it's not really Melchizedek.
You spent personal. That was a personal attack, and it's not about that. I like the way you are bringing truth and information. It's all about information and dissecting information, and the Spirit will lead you and reveal more truths to you, to that truth seeker. But again, could you please ask your guest about the Melchizedek cult?
All right, I'll ask him, and I appreciate that. Wait, I'm sorry. I'm just out of time. I had one more person to get through, Dale, but it's nice to hear from you. Mark has been hanging on for like 20 minutes. I just wanted to get him on before top of the hour from west of the Rockies. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? I was in those Poway fires a year ago in San Diego.
Yeah.
And I witnessed something that I don't think the show has ever had on it before, and please, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong. I witnessed a fire-type figure run across out of a fire and then go into another, like a patch of flames, and then it disappeared. And I don't know what to call it. Was it a ghost? I don't know what to call it, but I saw that as I'm watching the houses around me burning. I see this flame figure run across the field behind where my house used to stand at, and it just disappeared into another.
I mean, I'm not being light here, but you mean kind of like Johnny from the Fantastic Four, like the flame from
right? It was a figure made out of flames. And
you know, I've never heard. It sounds like kind of like a flaming shadow person, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody talk about it. I tell you what, though, I'll keep an eye on my email and I'll bring it up to the producers and see whether anybody can speak to that in the weeks ahead. Intriguing idea. Flame people out there. Well, we'll put it all aside for now and get Secret Agent 666 lined up next. Could Aleister Crowley have been involved in the sinking of the Lusitania as an agent for the British? as well as other exploits next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.